Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
March 1849. Workers searching the woods between Edgefield and Abbeville County, South Carolina, stumbled across a shallow grave. Inside, the decomposing body of a man. The coroner arrived, examined the remains, recorded his findings in careful detail, the sort of clinical precision that shows up in death records of the era. Cause of death: a leaden ball shot from a gun or pistol by the hands of some person or persons unknown. It was one detail that transformed this from a possible suicide or accident into something else entirely. The dead man's hands were still tied together. His name was Appling. He was enslaved. And roughly 1 month earlier, he'd made his owner a deal. "I'll murder your wife for you. In exchange, you give me my freedom." The tied hands, that was the evidence that the deal had always been a lie. To understand how an enslaved man came to propose murder, we need to go back to Edgefield, South Carolina, a town where violence was so routine. Locals said blood had been shed on every square foot of the town. Welcome back, friend, to Hometown History, the podcast that takes a stroll down the main streets and back alleys of the past to uncover how local stories shaped the world. I'm Shane Waters, and today we're exploring a story from Edgefield, South Carolina, a town that earned the nickname Bloody Edgefield and a reputation as the Deadwood of its day. In the mid-19th century, Edgefield County recorded a 39% violent crime rate, the highest in South Carolina. Violence wasn't exceptional here. It was routine. Against that backdrop, in February 1849, an enslaved sawmill worker named Appling made his owner an offer: freedom in exchange for murder. What followed exposed the brutal mechanics of what historians call criminal bargains, informal contracts between enslavers and enslaved people that the legal system barely acknowledged. This is the story of Martin Posey, the man called the Devil, and the impossible negotiation that ended with two murders, a trial that transfixed a county, and an execution that drew the largest crowd Edgefield had ever seen. By all accounts, Edgefield, South Carolina, wasn't a place where violence shocked anyone. 39% of all prosecutions in the county involved violent offenses. Contemporary newspapers described drunken brawls in the town square as routine entertainment. The folks in Edgefield weren't horrified by violence. They were accustomed to it. Historians have called it the Deadwood of its day, comparing it to the lawless mining towns of the American West. The courthouse still stands today, a handsome brick building completed in 1839, designed by Charles Beck, associate of South Carolina's famous architect, Robert Mills. It served as the county courthouse continuously since then. But in 1849, the cases that filled its docket weren't about property disputes or contract law. They were about violence, murder, assault, blood feuds that lasted generations. Martin Posey was 34 years old, a man of modest means who married into the wealthy Holmes family to elevate his position. He operated a sawmill and owned a plantation worked by enslaved laborers, including Appling. By all accounts, the community long distrusted him. He drank heavily. He admitted to beating his wife, Matilda. He earned the local nickname, the Devil of Montmorency, supposedly hosting, as one account put it, nightly carnivals with the devil. Contemporary descriptions paint him as having quite the thirst for power and money, coupled with his inconsideration for everyone but himself. Historians have called him a true narcissist, who ran his affairs like a mob boss. This wasn't someone operating in the shadows. This was a man whose reputation preceded him. The financial incentive was explicit and legally structured. When Matilda's father died in 1847, his estate was divided among his children, and South Carolina's coverture laws created quite the deadly incentive structure. Under coverture, a legal doctrine inherited from English common law. When a woman married, all her personal property became her husband's immediately. He gained management and control of her real estate, and upon her death, he had strong inheritance claims. Research shows only 1-2% of South Carolina couples executed marriage settlements to protect women's property. The Holmes family apparently had no such protections in place. So when Matilda inherited her portion of the Holmes estate, Martin Posey controlled it automatically. He became, according to sources, obviously infatuated with Matilda's younger sister, Eliza, a teenage widow still under 18. If he could eliminate Matilda and marry Eliza, he would control her portion of the Holmes estate as well. But South Carolina law does not permit divorce. The state was one of the few that outlawed it entirely. For Martin Posey, murder became, his calculation, the only solution to what was essentially a property problem. Into this situation stepped Appling. According to trial evidence and historical accounts, Appling initiated the deal. He approached Martin Posey with the proposal, not the reverse. Historians emphasize that Appling knew Martin was unhappily married. He knew South Carolina law did not allow divorce, and he offered to kill his enslaver's wife in exchange for a promise of freedom. Scholars who study this case are careful to note that Appling was neither passively acquiescent nor docile, but entrepreneurial. He demonstrated what historians call slave agency, the capacity to negotiate, even within brutal constraints. Lacking conventional bargaining chips, like money or property, he weaponized the only thing he had. But the power asymmetry was absolute. South Carolina's Negro Act of 1740 prohibited enslaved people from giving sworn testimony in court, especially against white defendants. Any promise Martin Posey made existed in a legal void, unenforceable, unwitnessable, and ultimately worthless. The bargain was always a lie. But for Appling, it represented the only path to freedom, imaginable within slavery's suffocating logic. On a Friday afternoon in February 1849, Matilda Posey was last seen directing enslaved workers on the plantation. Martin asked his wife to check on the dairy door, a mundane household task. There, Appling waited. He bludgeoned her to death, while Martin, according to trial evidence, encouraged him from behind. They buried her body in a shallow grave in the wooded land near a spring on the property. Within days, teenage Eliza moved in with Martin. The community buzzed with rumors. Folks whispered that Appling had confessed to another enslaved person named Franklin about committing the murder, then fled. But there was no proof, no body, no evidence. Approximately 1 week later, searchers found Matilda's body in the shallow grave. And then, roughly 1 month after Matilda's murder, workers accidentally discovered Appling's decomposing body in a nearby county. The coroner examined the remains, recorded his findings: death by a leaden ball shot from a gun or pistol. But it was one detail, the same detail that opened this story, that transformed everything. Appling's hands were tied together. This wasn't suicide. This wasn't an accident. This was an execution. Martin Posey had simply erased the witness to his crime. The deal for freedom died the moment it was useful. The discovery of Appling's bound body shifted suspicion directly to Martin Posey. Wilson Kirkland, Posey's overseer, was arrested first and by all accounts promptly accused Posey of orchestrating both murders without hesitation. That same night, authorities found Martin and Eliza hiding at Francis Posey's house, Martin's father. Both were arrested. Within days, Francis Posey and Albert Posey, Martin's brother, were arrested as accessories to Appling's murder. The entire Posey family network was implicated. The key witness was Franklin, an enslaved person whose exact ownership and location remain uncertain in historic records. Franklin came forward with testimony that Appling had confessed to him about Matilda near the spring. This information led investigators to the body's location. According to South Carolina's Negro Act of 1740, enslaved people could not give sworn testimony in court, yet their statements at coroner's inquests could be recorded. The coroner's report on Matilda notes that, quote, "one of my Negroes had told him that Appling had killed my wife and buried her near the spring." Franklin's voice existed only as secondhand report. Never direct, never sworn, never legally recognized as fully human speech. But it was enough to build a case. To put this in context, a landmark study by historian Michael S. Hindus found that of 71 prosecutions of white people for killing enslaved people across 18 South Carolina districts over 40 to 60 year periods, only 16 resulted in conviction. That's a 22.5% conviction rate. Chief Justice John Belton O'Neill, who himself enslaved roughly 150 people, was the only prominent South Carolinian to protest the evidentiary prohibition. He argued that Negroes will feel the sanctions of an oath with as much force as any of the ignorant classes of white people. The legal system was designed to make crimes involving enslaved people invisible and unprosecutable. But Martin Posey had made two mistakes. First, he killed a white woman from a prominent family. Second, he'd left physical evidence, Appling's tied hands, that contradicted any suicide narrative. By October 1849, the case had generated intense public interest. The Edgefield Advertiser sold a 75-page trial pamphlet for 20 cents, quite a sum for the era, suggesting strong demand for details about these crimes. The community was ready for answers. The trial began October 10, 1849, at the Edgefield County Courthouse, the same handsome brick building that stands today. Martin Posey faced two separate murder trials, one for killing his wife, Matilda, one for killing his enslaved worker, Appling.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
The public pressed eagerly into the space. So many people that standing room vanished. They'd come to hear the detailed evidence of how Posey got Appling to kill his wife and how Posey subsequently murdered Appling to keep him silent. The prosecution presented 4 days of evidence. Franklin's testimony about Appling's confession. The discovery of Matilda's body near the spring. Exactly where Franklin said Appling buried her. The coroner's finding on both bodies. Matilda bludgeoned. Appling shot with his hands tied. The suspicious timing of Eliza moving in with Martin within days of Matilda's disappearance. Wilson Kirkland, the overseer, testified about Martin's orders and movements. Family members contradicted Martin's alibi. Physical evidence mounted. The defense argued quite the predictable strategy, that Appling, as an enslaved person, had acted alone in murdering Matilda, then committed suicide out of guilt. That Martin Posey had merely discovered the crimes, not orchestrated them. But those tied hands destroyed that narrative. You can't shoot yourself with tied hands bound together. Someone executed Appling, and the prosecution made clear who had both motive and opportunity. After 4 days of testimony, the jury deliberated. They returned guilty verdicts on both counts. The murder of Matilda Posey and the murder of Appling. The sentence, death by hanging. The execution would be carried out on February 10, 1850. It's believed Martin Posey was convicted because he crossed a line the community couldn't tolerate. According to the trial manuscript editor, it is a saying in Edgefield and elsewhere that if a man have money, he may do anything and not be hanged for it. But let him kill his wife here, and the gold of California cannot buy eloquence enough to save him. The community could tolerate extraordinary violence toward enslaved people. The 22.5% conviction rate proved that. But murdering a white woman from a prominent family, that crossed a boundary. Significantly, Posey faced equal prosecution for both murders, Matilda and Appling's. The legal system at least nominally recognized Appling's humanity, even while denying him most legal protections. Justice so compromised by slavery's logic that calling it justice at all requires careful qualification. On February 10, 1850, roughly 4 months after his conviction, Martin Posey was executed by hanging in Edgefield. The crowd that gathered numbered between 4,000 and 5,000 people, more than 10 times the village population. The Edgefield Advertiser called it a spectacle, which even the oldest inhabitants could not recollect for its size. That afternoon, the town square descended into what newspapers called drunken brawls. Violence as entertainment, violence as community bonding, violence so normalized that even an execution couldn't proceed without it. The execution was justice of a sort, but it left questions unanswered. What happened to Martin and Matilda's four children? The historical record is silent. Where is Martin Posey buried? Unknown. What became of Eliza, the teenage sister who married Martin after his arrest and was found hiding with him at his father's house? She left South Carolina, but beyond that, the trail vanishes. And Franklin, the enslaved man whose testimony helped convict Martin Posey, what happened to him? His voice exists only as a secondhand report in a coroner's inquest, never sworn, never legally recognized as fully human speech. We don't even know who owned him. This 1849 case illuminates dynamics still contested in 2025. This question of agency under constraint. How much autonomy exists within oppressive systems remains central to discussions of criminal justice, labor rights, and power imbalances. Appling's desperate bargain challenges us to think beyond simple victim-perpetrator binaries while acknowledging that agency under extreme constraint is qualitatively different from genuine freedom. The case also demonstrates how legal systems create injustice through structural design, not just biased application. The prohibition on enslaved testimony wasn't an aberration, but a foundational feature, ensuring that crimes involving enslaved people remained invisible. Modern parallels exist wherever legal systems systematically exclude certain voices or perspectives. The Edgefield County Courthouse still stands on the town square, the same brick building where Martin Posey was tried in 1849. It served continuously as the county courthouse for 186 years. If you visit Edgefield today, you can stand in the same space where that four-day trial unfolded, where Franklin's secondhand testimony helped convict a man called the Devil of Montmorency. And if you listen carefully to the stories locals tell, you'll still hear the echoes of what made Edgefield, Bloody Edgefield. Even a spectacular execution couldn't proceed without drunken brawls in the town square afterward. I'm Shane Waters. Every hometown has a story. Tonight, it's Appling's impossible bargain and the tied hands that proved the devil's deal was always a lie. If this story resonated with you, share it with someone who appreciates history that challenges easy answers. Good night, friend.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to six guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.